This is Judith Stoutland with the second session of Peacemaking, which is entitled Nurturing a Center. So welcome, everyone. Most of you have signed before, you don't have to sign everything again. If you would do that, I think that would be helpful. And let's see, were you here last night as well? Karen then is the person who wasn't here last night, and maybe I'll just say that what we talked about were definitions of peace, and we gave all the words that we would use to define peace. And some of them were defined, we defined certain things negatively, that is what peace was not and what peace was. We mentioned conflict resolution, harmony, lack of chaos or anarchy, serenity, justice, acceptance, nonviolence, understanding the consequences of war, wholeness, no racism, shalom, inclusion, brotherhood and sisterhood, community, tolerance, surrender, and agape. We mentioned the active verbs of making peace: listening, articulating, advocating, questioning, forgiving, appreciating, nurturing, cooperating. And this would make us as peacemakers, as people who are creating peace, enhancing peace, allowing peace, willing peace, nurturing peace. We emphasize that peace is not a goal, but is a process, it's a way, it is the climate in which we work. We also mentioned the four principles that are four moral standards that Immanuel Kant says are necessary for peace: the renunciation of violence, the insistence on truth and accuracy, fidelity to commitment, and a strict limitation on secrecy. And mentioned that Cicero Bach also says these are not found in absolutes but in proportions, and that what one would strive for was a climate. And that climate would be not only something in which one could survive, or might range from what one could survive in to one which one could thrive in. And we invented the word thrival for that. So peacemakers are interested in thrival. A number of the things, the topic for today actually came up out of that conversation last night, in which people said it is often very difficult for individuals to have individual peacemakers to have within them the kind of peace that other people felt, and maybe in fact these peacemakers felt was useful, but that peacemakers were not necessarily always peaceful people, or people filled with peace. And I think that's very true, and it's an important thing to remember that because you are working for a peaceful cause does not mean that you are perfect. And I think we read another list of things that said peacemakers are not perfect or self-righteous. So today our focus is going to be on nurturing a center, because unless we are, the more centered we are, the more resources and strength we have within us, the more we will have for this process that we are working on. We will be stronger members of our community and more effective members in this goal towards a better climate, a more healthful atmosphere that we're living in. So there is a book that I have liked a lot that I think might be a good one for those of you who are looking for something more in your long road on the peace walk. As we walk this long road, we sometimes feel we're circling and coming back again to certain places. Maybe it's like in mountain climbing, you do switchbacks. I don't know. You say, hey, this is looking, the view from here is pretty much the same as I remember a couple of years ago. And what do I do now, and how can I feel about that? It's a good guide. It's designed for congregational use. You could use it individually. I think it would be most effective with one or two other people, simply because there's room for interaction and suggestions for interaction and consideration. But what we're doing here in these sessions this week is not brand new. We're really touching many places that some people have been before, maybe opening new places where other people haven't been. But we are reminding ourselves really of truths and things that have been important to people for a long time. So this is not the place for really innovative things. On the other hand, every time an idea comes to you, whether it's the 10th time and it seems new, it is new and invigorating. So,
but I can't see the title.
Oh, reading it too fast. Yeah, right. It's called Call to be Peacemakers by John Stoner, and you can get the address from this as well for ordering it. In From Call to be Peacemakers, John Stoner says there are a number of assumptions that can be made for peacemakers. First of all, we are all called. Everyone is involved. Not necessarily to the same task, not necessarily to the same degree, but all are called. And secondly, and this, the quote I think on the sheet I gave you, which again I've given you as sort of a resource to choose and use as it speaks to you. At one time I thought, if I had been given the full day for this for everybody, we'd all spend all day on this, but to take one of these and to use it as a meditation for the day, to think about it and maybe even to write about it could be a good thing to do, and then to share some of those. We won't have time for that right here, but it could be something you could do maybe if you live in the same lodge, or if when you get back home, to take one and think about individually and then to share with others. On this sheet, the very last one on the right-hand column, from the Roman Catholic Challenge of Peace, peacemaking is not an optional commitment. It is a requirement of our faith. We are called to be peacemakers, not by some movement of the moment, but by Jesus Christ. So all are called. Secondly, we all have a next step. No one has arrived. No one has gotten to the point where nothing more is left to be done. We all have a next step. It may be an obvious next step, and you move into it. It may be a mystery. So you may feel, this is just, I'm feeling my growth, I'm feeling the progression. You might feel very threatened. You might feel very challenged. But everyone has a next step. And third, all violence is interrelated. All peacemaking is interrelated. And that's why I think we're seeing peacemaking, hearing peacemaking in many, many different places in Holden Village right today. And we certainly know that our culture is very violent, so to see how that interrelatedness will be very important for us. And I also want, I think I'll add right here, the cycle of violence can be interrupted. Not easily, but...
Did you happen to see Grand Canyon yesterday?
No, no. That fits
yes.
Right in.
Oh, yes. A lot of the movies that they're showing fit right in.
Fourth, peacemaking is a religious vocation and a spiritual task. Now, if you have trouble with the word religious, this is meant in the best sense of that term, as a religious vocation and a spiritual task. But just to say faith and action are united. Fifth, community is a vehicle for change in peacemaking. We're going to be talking about individuals today in our individual centers, but we also are going to be talking about the circles that go closest out from that, relationships, family, and community that you'd like. So we see that it never just stops with one person, and that sixth, renewal and reformation or reforming begin with small groups of people, and they are radical group-changing actions. So sort of using some of that as either, if you'd like to begin on any one of those, we can do that. But before we do that, I don't think everyone, Karen for certain doesn't know everyone's name. So let's give our names and so we have a sense of who we are. I'm Judith Stoutland from Northfield, Minnesota.
And I'm Karen Herseth-Lee, also from Northfield, Minnesota, and I'm here this morning.
Gary Trenum from Federal Way, south of Seattle.
Patty Belts from here, just from Houston before I came here.
Mary Arneson from Olympia, Washington.
I'm Linda Stewart from Newport, Oregon.
Suzanne Chernow from Ritzville, Minnesota.
Is it Washington?
Okay. So from what I've said, is there something you'd like to begin with or to respond to? Anything about we are all called? Our sense of the importance of each of us being involved?
How does one alert persons or communities or congregations to that fact if they don't seem to be aware of it or reflecting it?
That we are.
I agree that we are all called, but I think lots of times, even in amidst people's best efforts, they don't see that they are, or see that there is some specific thing they could be doing about mm-hmm. that.
Anybody have any experience from that, or frustration, or
frustrations?
Well, I don't know that I have experience, but an idea. It seems to me that one of the ways that people can become aware of that call is to become aware of the obstacles and to own their own obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
And as I look inside myself, and it was brought to light by one of your comments, the self-protecting drive to protect oneself.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Crabb, in a book called Inside Outside, describes sort of two chief besetting sins of humans. One of them is self-protectiveness, and the other one is a sense of demandingness, of expectation and entitlement. The world owes me,
mm-hmm.
or I demand to have certain levels of comfort or something. And between those two, they're a tremendous wall against peace. They
mm-hmm.
are breeding grounds of aggression and violence. And if people become aware of those elements and aware of them as sinfulness to confess, it can generate some thirst and sense of desire to respond.
Anybody else have either a frustration or a suggestion that might not be being used but might be a good idea for this?
I belong to a rural congregation. I belong to it 6 years since I retired. And it's I find a feeling that everything, all the conflict in the world is out there. But in reality, I think it's right in our church.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is frustrating because we're not going to take peace as a topic. But in, I'll call it Ladies Aid, in Ladies Aid, when there is a problem and they line up, the women line up on either side, then I always say, and you think we have trouble? What about the UN? And what about, you know, you go mm-hmm. on related. I think that we can't look for solutions, but we have to look for an awareness that it's not all out there. It's not you guys.
No, so, but I think a lot of people just really don't want to look at that.
They don't.
No matter what age we are. I just got a really sad letter from my mother, and I tried to write back to comfort her, but she's 85. And has learned in the last few years, as the rest of our family, that she has a lesbian granddaughter, our daughter. And she's wanted to tell somebody. She lives in Pierre, South Dakota. Now, this is just not really a progressive community. And she's lived there for lots of years. And so she's tried to figure out how to bring this topic up. And, you know, she doesn't want to have this granddaughter be the only one she can ever talk about or have anybody ever ask about. And so my book, which is out, came to her. She thinks it's such a beautiful book. So one day she had bridge with some of these other 80-plus-year-old ladies. And she decided that in the middle of the bridge day, she would invite them to lunch and she would show them the book. And so she did this. I mean, it's her invitation, and I think there were only three of them, but they're so supposedly her longtime good friends, longtime friends. And she started to talk about it, and they just shut her up. They just said, we don't want to hear this, Lorna. On very plain days, we don't want you to be this controversial. And she came home, and she's just sort of devastated because she doesn't have all that many friends. How can she call them friends? And they are her church
community as well. And, you know, she just kind of stuck her neck out a little bit and got it really chopped off. And she was just feeling so sad. I mean, both about, you know, trying to brag about the movie and this thing that's happened. And not getting any opportunity. I mean, she, when I got my next card from her, she said, well, I really got my ears pinned back by these friends, you know, Ken and Paul and friends. And I could feel her heartache about, not just about the issue she was talking about, but her friendship. And I just thought, okay, you know, we've got all kinds of congregations and communities filled with people like this. That happens to be one of the many issues that we are wanting to try to be peacemakers about, trying to understand. And boy, you get real weary of it after a while. And finally, some people get so weary they can't keep sticking their necks out all the time and withdraw.
Sure. Withdraw either from the friendship, from the congregation, sometimes from the Lutheran church,
right,
or whatever church they're in. The exhibit is of peacemakers. A number of those people were a part of the beginning of the Lutheran Peace Fellowship, when one of the reasons that was founded as a Lutheran Peace Fellowship, and the people who were conscientious objectors during the Second World War did not, one reason they founded it was because they did not want to have to leave the church to have a group of people who shared their faith and their commitment. And they saw too many people who had left.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the reasons they said, well, there were only 100 people registered as COs during the Second World War. And they said, well, that's partly because so many had joined other churches or left the church altogether, because they found no support or, in fact, negative feedback from the church. So that is...
Yeah, I mean, I look at all six of these things that you've just gone over, and, you know, if you take that instance, I don't think Mother's going to make a dent in any of those, in her group of friends or in this church group.
The other thing is, there are times when these things are very lonely, which is another reason for a group like that. It's another reason for sessions like this, where people who are interested and want to focus on some of the issues can come together. So it is not easy. That maybe we should have this indefinitely. I think we mentioned that yesterday, but 7 should be, it is not easy. It is lonely.
That's kind of what I wrote and told her. I just said, you know, you kind of keep taking your baby steps all the time, and every once in a while you get slapped down, and you hope that you're tough enough to do it again.
But if you believe the last quotation, and I do, then peacemaking is not an optional commitment. It's a requirement of our faith, which means no matter what, we don't give up.
But it really helps to have other people there to...
It sure does.
And to encourage. And that may be an important role of peacemaking, to be that voice of encouragement, whether it comes through... You know, I get a lot of my energy, a lot of my strength from the writings and the work of other people, other groups. So I subscribe to a number of magazines that come and sort of fill me regularly in that way. So that is one of my sources for that. When you hear the gospel, when you hear the readings, in church on Sunday, you say, you know, this is so focused on what's happening in my family or in me, or what's happening in this congregation, whether it is our congregation. They had quite a flap once over the color of the carpet. I don't know if you remember that or not.
Yeah.
Someone asked me, well, what do you think about the color of the carpet? I said, I don't think we should talk about it. I was in the middle of a whole lot of other many more struggles and more things. Or whether it is, whether it is a larger issue, the role of our country, the role of the church in some way. So I think, you know, when you hear the gospel that way, but often it is not, that isn't the way that God, that isn't what people choose to expand on in sermons or in prayers. However, I should say that at our congregation, the one that Karen and I belong to, we have a group called the Peace and Justice Group. It meets once a month, does a number of things. We try to have something in our monthly paper. It keeps getting squeezed here and there, but sometimes it's just a line or two. And it's very modest. It is extraordinarily modest. We have a bulletin board that we try to keep up to date or changed and certain issues on. A lot of people don't notice bulletin boards. We're so committed to so many things that sometimes that bulletin board is just too crowded, and you know, unless it's small, you don't do it. We do some other things within the congregation during the year. We have a fast day, and we have a dinner after that. And we sponsor adult forums. And we have monthly meetings. Our monthly meetings, we have anywhere from 5 to 15 people. It's not, you know, really a large group in a group in a congregation our size. But the group that meets feels good and renewed and strengthened by this. But many people in the congregation say, I can't come Thursday nights. I just can't make it. So then they can often come on Sundays. Sometimes they can't come on Sundays. But even those little lines that are in the bulletin or in the voice, they'll say, I'm really glad that this is happening. Mm-hmm. So they feel a touch even though they're not active. So for the members of this Peace and Justice group, I think that that is something of an encouragement that that you know, you're a voice and you don't know if anybody is hearing the voice, but sometimes people are. Mm-hmm. And it can happen in the most, you know, the time you say, well, that was just put something in that month that didn't seem to be really right on. Mm-hmm. And someone will come up and say, that line has been in my mind for 2 weeks. So that is one of the ways to overcome some of the discouragement that might come. But this perhaps, I think maybe what I would like to see, if you would like to focus on a little bit, is that inner core that each person needs to have for your own strength that says, I can go on in spite of the fact that my friends won't listen to the poetry of one daughter or the situation of my granddaughter. How then can we nurture ourselves and make sure we are fed? Maybe people have ways that they would like to speak to, and then we can go on to some other things. It's called nurturing a center.
I think coming to things like this helps. You don't feel alone, and you complain to the same person all the time, they're going to stop listening. And to know that other people are having the same type of frustrations you are, it makes you go on. Mm-hmm.
I was going to say the same thing, because actually in the last two summers, my mother has come here in the summer. She's just loved these sessions and what she's doing. She was one of the depression people who didn't get to have an education like a lot of us do. And this felt like an education.
Right. Going to pass.
It was like opportunities to discuss and reveal that she hadn't had, loved it. But I think, as I come back to that again, the opportunities wane with your age. Now, those of us who are younger, we can put ourselves in the place of some of these things, and that gets harder to do when you're older.
The older ones could call the people on this organization and tell them, I'm praying for you, or I appreciate what you're doing. The older people have a lot of things they can do that are more the supporting of the ones that are much more active. I think when we saw the slides last night, the appreciation coming 4 days before they hit the South Pole, it gave them the boost to make it. I don't think we realize how much that means, especially when we're in a hard place.
Sometimes what we are doing seems so small and so obvious that it can't be really valuable.
Right.
And indeed, that's important to remember. a glass of water.
And I think reading the Bible is an inner source of strength. I mean, I know that is for lots of people. They return to that over and over again, and struggle and disappointment.
One of the things I noticed last night was the way she said, how she had to, when there she was, out with, you know, no boundaries, no horizons, and how important it was for her to keep her focus. Mm-hmm. Whenever you're in the middle of something that is absolutely overwhelming, whether it is, you know, a big task or this in this situation of being out there on the ice field or wherever, the really importance of keeping focus. She, now, there are times we have to look up and see the big picture, but she just looked down and she just saw what was right in front of her and kept going. And that's one way of keeping focus. And there are other ways of focusing as well. For me, this is a difficult thing. I mean, this is a challenging thing to say, okay, focus. Because my tendency would be to find more and more things that I'm interested in, that I think are important, and so forth. So you can, you know, you can say you're going to be in peace work, and you just, everyone is called, you can't avoid it. And what do? Because if you read the newspaper, it's overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one place after another is overwhelming. So if you keep a focus and you choose, I've chosen to focus on an area of the world in which I have had a number of connections, and I don't know the whole history of everything in all of the other major areas. I know something, but I don't know as much as I do about El Salvador and Central America. That's one way to focus. Another thing is to focus, I think, on your own spiritual well-being, your own health. And there are all sorts of things that are a part of that that don't seem to be a part of it, maybe. And for me, one of those is to laugh. Mm-hmm. To find something of beauty and to something that is enjoyable to laugh about. I mean, it just makes me feel good all over my body. And it's important to remember that no matter how terrible certain things are, at least I am still in such a privileged position that I can still laugh. And I have visited people and met people whose lives have been so full of tragedy that when I say, may I take your picture, and they say yes, and I take the picture and they smile at me, I always weep because I don't know how they can smile still after what they just told me about their life. So that's one of, do the rest of you have other needs or health things for this nurturing of your inner self and your own strength? Come to Holden Village.
Well, keeping the focus comes back to the time issue, which is a big one in our culture. We had a forum some weeks ago about how we spend time and how mm-hmm. the culture saps us from, we are all over the place, and other people need our gifts and talents, and how to begin to be wise about your own use of time, what you can handle and what you can't, and where you're spread too thin, and where you need to watch out for yourself, and which times of year, you know, I mean, everything is in kind of a flux, and that it's not a bad thing to care for yourself that way, or else you'll be so depleted you can't function in other ways that you need to do. And I think that's a hard one. I mean, that's hard even at Holden. I'm constantly aware that we bring our busyness from out there here. And you can get, you don't even know if you should take a nap or go for a hike, because you might miss something.
Exactly.
and then feel guilty if you do one or the other. And the shoulds will follow you right to Holden Village. Something like, I think everyone has to work that out for themselves.
Let me just throw out some of the things again from this book, and it's this book called The Peacemakers. We'll just review what the scope of it is: peacemaking in ourselves, between men and women, in our families, in our church and community, between races and cultures, in the economy, with our environment, in the nation, in the world, and then sharing the vision of peacemaking. It's designed as a study booklet for congregational groups. And in this chapter, and called to be peacemakers in ourselves, which asks for a lot of self-examination about where one gets one's strength, where one gets renewal, and so forth, because I think we can get it in different ways in different places. They suggest a number of things, a number of disciplines, and they quote a man named Dallas Willard in The Spirit of Disciplines, and there are disciplines of abstinence and disciplines of engagement. And and here some of them are. Disciplines of abstinence, solitude. You could maybe say, oh, well, that's actually active. What seems negative might be positive in a certain way, but these are what he calls disciplines of abstinence, of solitude, of silence, of fasting, frugality, Mary Schramm's sufficiency from her thing there, chastity, secrecy, and sacrifice. Given what we said yesterday, secrecy is going to be a hard one for us. Although Cicela Bock says the difference between the amount of secrecy you need in a personal relationship is different than the kind of secrecy you do not want to have in an international or in a communal relationship. And it would be a matter of secrecy and privacy, kind of have places where they hit each other. Would you like me to read those again?
Mm-hmm.
Disciplines, I could write them on the board.
Would that be helpful?
Right. Okay, solitude. I'll give you time to think about each one as I read it, as I write it. Solitude, silence, fasting, frugality, chastity, secrecy, sacrifice. Should we put privacy here?
Yeah. Unless anyone walks in and sees that, thinks we're KKK or something.
So these are the disciplines of abstinence. Now, you know, if you want to play with the words about saying no, it's a one way of being positive. But, and then disciplines of engagement. Study. Worship. Celebration. Service. Prayer, fellowship, confession, submission.
I'm going to say a submission would be an engagement.
You think submission? You
I'm
don't
deep
think
there. Just
wondering about
yeah.
It.
Yeah, that's important. How else do you feel about in this? As I was writing this, I thought, "Uh-oh, I think we'll need to talk about this word." I think it can have so many connotations that might be positive, might be negative. So submission, how can it be a matter of engagement?
The only kind of submission I can think of as positive is when you had differences of opinion and you compromised. And when the compromise has had the majority decision is made, and you happen to be in the minority, that you submit to the majority. That kind of submission.
It's a kind of acceptance more than Now that we have to be careful with that because peacemakers, that you know, from yesterday I was reading Paul Scherer. I'll read this for you, Karen, as well. Paul Scherer, who taught at Union Theological Seminary, was talking about pacifists, and in the discussion of what pacifism was, indicated what it was not. And it was not absolute renunciation of war, not necessarily idealistic or utopian, not self-righteous, not the repudiation of justice on behalf of something called love, not a cure-all that substitutes uncomplicated and absolute decisions for difficult decisions that must be continually remade and reevaluated, which might, and it was not passivism at all. So we don't want to say that acceptance means just said, well, whatever will be, will be. There may be, peacemakers also often say you can't always tell when the cause will have been achieved. I hate to use the word when the victory will have been won because it sounds so militaristic. It's very hard to give up some of these terms. If we indeed have something that we are working very hard for, we want it to happen, and then we say we are either victorious or we've achieved or we've won or whatever. And that is the Dag Hammarskjöld quote. Reason, justice, and compassion are all small cards to play, but they're at the very end. I learned that immediate success often has very little to do with lasting achievement, and that the judgment of history on many controversial issues will be very different from the fashionable judgment of the time. So maybe this has to do with losing the battle and winning the war, or winning the battle and losing the war, to unfortunately use those military metaphors that we have. So maybe it is a willing... The other thing is often to say, well, maybe I don't know what the best thing will be. And so, you know, you choose the things that you're going to work hardest on, knowing that there are certain things you should never, never happily accede to or accept. You may stop whatever protest you are making or stop whatever energy you're putting, not the energy you're putting towards, you may stop your current plan, but it does not mean that you are accepting what is there. But maybe you can't do anything any farther. I'm thinking in terms of maybe, an example might be if somebody came into your congregation of a different race or a handicapped person, and people were not willing to do, let's say you're supposed to take out the front row or have the front row for the wheelchairs, where you have to redo everything so that you can get a wheelchair down this aisle, and they say, no, no way, we're not going to do it. You know that it's not right that even that small a thing is keeping people away, but you might not be able to keep at it over and over again. You may work at it in a different way. This is a real, it's good to think about it, but I think it is not something that's just a stamp. These are not just stamps.
Martin Luther King had to submit to being imprisoned to authorities and their mm-hmm. structure even while he resisted it.
Jane mm-hmm. Mason does it too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. True. And then acceptance, the submission might also be to accept consequences that come from that. Any other questions? We've been focusing on a little bit, although it's these categories also get so fuzzy, on our own, the strength of the peacemaker, the inner center, nurturing a center. Is there anything else that,
My experience of this, which is limited in my own church mostly, is that helping achieve and other people achieve a freedom from fear and dealing with core fear is the right way to nurture the center that leads to peace. As long as people are filled with fear, they are not able to rise above that tendency to make others the threatening and project that outward fear onto others. So dealing with fear in a lot of small ways and helping people discuss it in a lot of, like we had a 10-week forum on AIDS, and there was a tremendous amount of fear. And through the course of that, there was a lot of discussion and confession and experience and ventilation of people's fear of other, of blood, of disease, of death, of sexuality, of homosexuality, of a whole host of fears that were brought out there. And to be able to do that, tremendous amount of increased acceptance and a more peaceful bridge-building attitude occurred out of that confrontation with fear. And a lot of times we try to build bridges and achieve peace before we've taken away the obstacles. And we don't recognize the obstacles within our hearts as well as other people's hearts. And if we're not free of fear ourselves, no one is attracted to our message.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Excellent. And it just sort of sums up a lot of this, facing what's in ourselves and then allowing that to be shared. And in order to do this, this also involves something else that is just sort of basic to all of this, and that is respect. It is the basis of everything in Immanuel Kant's four categories. It is basic to respecting ourselves so that we can feel strong, we can feel the strength that we have. Even if it may not be the strength of somebody else, it is our strength, and we can respect that. And in a sense, it sounds crazy, and to respect our inadequacies, to acknowledge them, submit to them maybe, and to say, I don't do that, and I don't do that well. Or to respect that, and then to respect that in others. And I don't know, Karen, but is it true that when we feel loneliness, it is because we may not respect ourselves as much, but we don't feel the respect, and respect includes love and caring. Mm-hmm. We don't feel the respect. Your mother didn't feel respected by her friends.
No.
And there are levels of respect, from just the courtesy of not bumping, from the courtesy of not doing all sorts of things, to the respect of paying attention when we don't want to pay attention, we're not basically interested. But I respect your need to tell me we've shared much, and this is something.
But they're afraid for her,
right?
Because of what you just said. When I was first, I've been a single parent really all my life, and a lot of people initially were very afraid of me and had no way to communicate, so they didn't. Mm-hmm. And over the years, you learn to live with that. But a lot of churches have no way really of dealing with that. Also, I was going to make a comment. I live in Oregon, where the OCA Measure 9 and has caused tremendous upheaval. And also in our church, which became then a center for the P-Flag, the Parent Friends of Gay Lesbians. But some of the people in our church clearly did not have the verbal skills to say gay, lesbian, and AIDS. They just don't have that skill. And they don't say it. And if they say it, they cough and they put their head down. And they're apologetic because of the Depression era, that kind of pre-World War II upbringing. It's certainly not to draw a blank across that. But I think you really hit it. A lot of people are afraid. So they pull back. And your mother's friends probably really want to reassure that everything is really okay. But they don't. They haven't a clue as to really what. What would you say? We came for a nice quiet afternoon to discuss hot tea and cookies. Yeah, and you just opened up this can of worms that we didn't even know there was a can open.
We didn't know the can could be open.
Exactly.
We thought it was a block of wood.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And now you have that. I don't think I'll be able to sleep tonight. And the whole thing, they just completely sent every direction that they could. So I think that's, but I'll tell you too, there's a lot of resources in Oregon because we have to fight people that fight it from the other side. And we still are. I think our state legislature, and I think people from Washington should know that Vaughn Maybaugh's on his way north. And
we have hands off Washington.
Yes, he's not going to stop just because you said you have.
Well, no, yeah, we.
He's mightily gathering his forces, and I was amazed at what happened.
We're not going to happen, are we?
Because in the name of the Lord, that is what is even more confusing, because very, very strictly mainline Christian people who this cannot be, and it is a confusing issue, particularly for people who may have been
pre-World War II, which was, you know, solid, rock solid, if the Bible says, and they just, you know, stay right in their pew.
Those parts of the Bible that we're looking at are also part of.
Well, but it's difficult for certain age groups, and maybe they haven't had as much education, and they don't feel as comfortable with speaking out and questioning things, so they said, you know.
Well, there's a long history of hate against the lesbian community, you know, much longer than the World War II phenomenon. And where I have a lot of anger is that I feel like it comes from the church. It comes from the verses of the Bible that we can quote, that we take out of Leviticus or wherever, which was part of the Jewish purity law. But people who feel strongly about this, you know, stand up and do that. And I do feel like in my own life, the baggage I had to unload at a certain point where we were learning about this really came from church-taught attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so ironic to me because we know that the life that Jesus models, that's exactly where Christ would be, is with the people pushed to the side, with people who are not understood by the larger society. We all know that. We hear it Sunday after Sunday after Sunday. That's not what we show. And, you know, I happen to know it firsthand from that issue, but it applies to all of them, to racism,
to poverty,
to the homeless, to economic.
Well, I like what you have to say about respect also, because as so many of these issues, we lump people and we stereotype them and we make them into agendas rather than human beings, or they're an organization, or they're a political force. They're not this feeling, heartfelt, hurting individual that Jesus came, same as he came to you and me, each sinful and each flawed. And if we have that sense of respect of individuality, it all of a sudden it makes humans arise before us that we wouldn't think of stepping on or rejecting or casting stones at.
We had a forum last Thursday on Honest Talk About Sex, and we had different age groups representing things about their own life, and the 16-year-old in the group spoke to the issue of respect. She did it very well, but she was talking between genders, you know, but if that were the primary value operating between you, there would be so much less of how we treat each other badly. That was pretty exciting because she was really a wise woman at a young age.
And open communication.
And that is, I just feel that it comes from the inner core of a person, and then this does go out to intimate relationships, whether that is, whether that's called family or it's best friends or good friends, or your most intimate friend, family, and then to the next group. We are in so many communities.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the community of where we work, and the community of where we worship, and the community of where we play, or the community where we live. Sometimes this is all the same community, but many times it isn't. And even for example, at the college where I work part-time, there are many communities in that. It's one community in one sense, but it's many, many, many communities in another. And so it just does seem to come out in that.
Well, the respect angle, again, I think about is really crucial along with love. It makes love a different phenomenon, you know, and I almost walked out of a sermon once where they were talking about marital love, husband wife love, respect, because this preacher preached about the fact that the woman was to love and respect her husband, the husband was to love the wife. And I thought, leaving it out that way is part of the reason you get the problems that you do. You know,
sure.
It seems a small thing, but it's not at all. It's big.
That was my first sacrament, he said, submission.
Right.
Because I ended up, I think that's what
you were looking at. Wife, submit yourself.
That's what you were, I think you were looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Saying that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, respect implies a person, and love, you can love an object. And think you're loving, where you're really not loving the person. So respect restores love to a fullness that doesn't have without it.
If you haven't looked at this, at what these peacemakers have said, I invite you to do it again. And actually, what Junie Nelson has said, she's a caretaker, preschool caretaker, and her concern for the respect that children develop for themselves and the importance of that is very eloquent, I think. And you know, it's the kind of thing, it's very good to be reminded of. I think she says it very well. We could read that now, or I think also John Bakke speaks a lot about the person, he's the fourth one down, speaks about what it means to him personally. Now these quotes are taken out of an hour interview, so you can imagine that these people have other things to say as well. And Barbara Polachek, who's right next to John, speaks about what it means, her peacemaking means as her vocation. Because the other things I do just so that I can do this other work. I don't have really, what you call it. My career is my peacemaking, and I do these other things for that. Tom Witt, I don't know if the quote there is the same, the one in which he talks about his concept of his individual commitment as much. But Benita Bach, at the far end, who many of you know from Colorado, lives in an intentional community where she says, I think it's hard to be a Christian in the world today, but living in the community, that community, you don't have any choice. And she talks about how it is, she emphasizes the positive, which is one of two things that I would just like to keep saying over and over again, is that everybody is a peacemaker and that peacemaking is active and positive. And she says, we're not a community of resistance. We are a community of insistence. Now, you know, if you work that out, that's fun. But I think, again, just that small change, that small attitude, we insist. By insist, meaning putting that first point. And she has a whole list of things that she would insist on. What is not in there is a story that she tells of a young woman from Brazil who came to live in their house. In this house in Denver, there are a number of people who are permanent residents, who are there all the time, American citizens. They have jobs of some sort, so they make the money and bring it in. They always have in their community people from around them who are Americans who come, people, street people or people they found. But they always have somebody there from the third world. And this is a very important thing for them, that they have this. Well, one year they had a woman from Brazil, maybe she stayed 2 years. And she came, and it was a rich time, and they did many things. As she was about to leave, she said, you know, it took me 3 years to come here. They wanted me to send me from the church. They wanted to send me, and I didn't want to come. I didn't want to go to the U.S. I thought that would be just too painful, too bad. Didn't want to be in that. But finally she came, and she lived in this community, and she said, you have taught me that it is possible to be Christian in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And that I have seen Christ in this home, in this house that we've lived in. Mm-hmm. And so there was a very warm and deep farewell that they had for each other as she witnessed to what it had meant for her to be in that home. And then, as Benita says, and when you have seen Christ, you go home a different way. You walk a different path. So that's Mary Schramm's quote also talks, she talks about living sufficiently, which is one of the ways in which you can nurture your sense of peacemaking or put in action some of the things you want. Just not to say the others don't also have important things to say, but these seem to speak directly to what we're talking about today. And sometime I will probably also get the complete text of those interviews proofed so that other people can read them better as well. We're getting close to the end of the hour, and I'm not sure that we've made a tidy circle, and I'm not sure that we need to, but is there anything anyone would like to say?
I would just couple comments, but the internet was probably good, but it is a circle. So that part of reading architecture too is that respect that no person is. And more or less, even the way Christian churches are set up, is that there's somebody in the front and then the rest are in the back. Not up like the old Episcopal and Catholic background is.
Some churches are changing.
Well, thank you for being here and for continuing on the path.
So our next time is tomorrow your day off?
Tomorrow's my day off.
So we skip the day, everybody. We'll try to get everyone back to Thursday.
Right, and then Thursday you have N30.
Right in early, yeah.
Oh dear, this wasn't...
We have to do the session.
I don't know if I have the mic on, is the thing, but when you come in, if it wasn't on?
I think that he was checking it out.
If there's something special you would like to focus on the next, in the next two times, please let me know. The last one is peacemaking in solidarity. And what I had in mind there was sort of looking towards the issues of peacemaking in the broader world. And if people wanted to speak to special things, whether it is within our own society in the United States, or whether it is, I speak a great deal to Central America, to Guatemala, and to El Salvador. And for example, I have the tape of Rigoberta Menchú's speech in Minnesota in the spring, and in fact, I should bring it over and have